You are listening to KKCR, Kauai Community Radio. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall. And, oh, it's volunteer-driven. You heard me hit a wrong button. Got all your attention, didn't I?
Yes.
Got mine. Deafened me for a moment there.
How are you, Felicia?
Good. On cue. That was the cue button I pushed.
You had your headsets on, too.
I had my headsets on. So
I jumped 3 feet.
For all of our listeners, hey, Kalamai. Kalamai. We're going to have a really good show today. It is definitely one where I invite the listeners to be able to be calling in at 808-826-7771.
I'll pick them up.
Yeah, and we have a whole bunch of topics, but I don't have in-studio guests, so that leaves me a little bit more latitude to just be, you know, picking it up wherever anybody is wanting to be picking it up. But we're going to be talking about some local things, and definitely as it goes to global. I've been in meetings and meetings and more meetings and courtrooms, and so all of that affects those who don't go to those meetings and courtrooms. And so part of Kauai Soapbox is we help you know what is relevant that's going on out in your world that you might maybe do well to know about. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Kauai Store.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Ke ala nu'ukia a KKCR, KKCR's mission statement. O KKCR ka hui leki o ku o ko'a no Kauai. He hui leki o kaiaulu e pai pai ia ai e ka lehu lehu a e ho'olele ana me ka ho'olaha ole. KKCR is Kauai's independent radio station, a community radio station supported by the people and broadcasting without commercials. Na pahuhopua KKCR, the goals of KKCR. E ho'olu I ka hoi, e a oaku, a e ho'ohau oli ho'i I na hoa ho'olohe. To encourage, to teach, and to also cause enjoyment in the listeners. E ma'alama, e ho'omau, I ho'olau le apu I na mea a me kanohona Hawaii. To care for, to perpetuate, and to celebrate Hawaiian customs and lifestyle. Ho ike I ka nani a kea o ko ka ko kaiaulu a me ke kaiaulu ku waho. Showcase the broad beauty of our community and the outside community. He kahua o KKCR no na leo a me na mele laha loa pu no me kalaha ole. O ke ke kahu foundation, ka mea e ho'oholo ai ia mau papahana lekio. KKCR is a platform for voices and songs both well-known and underrepresented. The Ke Kahu Foundation facilitates these radio programs.
And I'm really proud to be a part of Kauai Community Radio and the Ke Kahu Foundation. I particularly, you know, like to occasionally play our mission statement because Kauai Soapbox is definitely one of the shows that works hard to be looking at what is good for not only all of Kauai, but also our Kanaka Mo'oli Hawaiian host culture, perpetuating it. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing, Felicia?
Good.
Can you hear me?
I can.
You know, I mean, sorry, I'm going to move from our ring now. It's nice that you can vote for whoever you want, Democrat, Republican, you know, Green Party, right in. And I don't want to put down anybody who votes for anybody because that's what a democracy is all about, is freedom to choose, right? But it astounds me, the millions of people that depend on, like, Fox News for their information. Yeah, I mean, I bet the majority of KKCR listeners don't, like, listen to Fox News. I mean, at least if you're not willing to listen to Democracy Now, because it's at a bad time of day like noon, you know, listen to CNN. You know, because once we lose the freedom of the press, you know, that will hold, you know, put Washington, you know.
Mm-hmm. Can I blow your mind for a moment? Can I just?
Yeah, sure.
When I went to the Democratic National Convention, I had a press pass.
Right.
It was actually pretty fun in that I'm sitting in there with Fox and CNN and Mother Jones and all these press people, and the only two that were honest was Fox and Democracy Now. The rest really manipulated. What happened in the room was not what was said on the television. And I mean, I think it was easy for Fox to say it because it was unflattering to the Democrats to speak the truth and how they were so unrighteous to Bernie Sanders. But they you know, it was really interesting to see it up close and personal and to see you know, leftist or centrist media manipulate at least as much as what we accuse Fox of doing. And since Fox was able to, you know, report just exactly what was going on in that hen house.
Well, no one's perfect, you know, even though it would, you know, you know, I just hope that things work out for you and me and everybody under the sun. You know, it's a complicated world and this and that. You know, I just, you know, except freedom of the press, you know, even if it's good press, bad press, you know, it's so important to a free democracy.
It is.
And it's so important. And I just, you know, I hope, you know, like I say, it's a complicated world and I feel like really it's an awkward, you know, God, I hope and pray and all this that it all works out in the end, even though at present it's just like, you know, I saw the most sad thing. I mean, they're going to have like millions and millions of people in Yemen that are going to be, are close to starving, coming to starving to death. It's, you know, you don't hardly see it in the news very often, but you just go, oh my God, you know, why can't we just all get along and take care of each other? Instead of we're always at war and fighting and disagreeing, are you a Republican? Are you a Democrat? It's like a civil war all over again. But anyway, thanks for your great show and keep up the good work.
Okay.
Have a nice day.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. So, you know, what he was just talking about, like in Yemen and there are other places where children are, you know, literally just starving to death. I saw, you know, just I came in right now. I was buying my bagels. I support my local bagelry from Yah, who makes bagels, and we were talking about that. And it just kind of came up in our conversation about, you know, the houseless people, many of whom are original peoples here. They sit at the benches out there, the picnic tables in front of the county council building, and I go over there. I feel like they're my friends. I say hi to them on a regular basis, and I want to thank Yah for sharing his extra bagels with the people who are there. You kind of help keep up the generosity going around. But as Yah pointed out, and as is the case, they've removed those picnic tables in the spirit of Christmas. So we'll have to hope that they will certainly return those picnic tables once the lights on rice are back. And in this heavy rain, I know the bathrooms, the public bathrooms for some time ago got removed. Are closed, locked, so that the people who don't have a place to go can't go. And I think that that's, if I was in charge, I'd try real hard. I'd change that. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Felicia and Marshall. This is Andrew Saharnas.
Hi.
Hey, Andy.
Hi. Yeah, and I just wanted to remark and then thank you on your remarks concerning CNN and the so-called liberal media. And, you know, all you have to do is examine the fact that who owns the media. And if you put the real truth on there, all their advertisers will pull out. And I would like to recommend two books by a man who's the foremost media scholar in the country, University of Illinois scholar William McChesney, who whenever there's election, he is always interviewed by Amy Goodman. And so if you want to jot this down.
Okay. Folks, what's the name of the book?
These I have read. They're in my library, and they're both profound. One is Rich Media, Poor Democracy.
Okay, Rich Media, Poor Democracy.
Yeah, and that's an older one, and but very important. And the other one came out in about 2011, Digital Disconnect.
All right, Digital Disconnect. And the name of the author again?
Yeah, it's William McChesney. I think it's McChesney.
Okay, all right. So his main theming is that, you know, when there's a lot of money going into the media, it's washing over the real populist discussion. Is that essentially what that is?
Well, yes, the fact that what really needs to be discussed isn't on there, or it's blacked out, or such things. And in his second book, he chronicles the erosion of independent journalism and how, huge amount of publications, newspapers, they've cut back on putting out independent investigators and journalism, and they just pick up the press feeds from the government or the Pentagon.
Or the press releases from the companies themselves. I know that when I look for to do research for this show, I look around. I do like Google search on some of the news pieces for the national issues, but I definitely look at Canadian, English, Arabic. I like Prime Television too, and Russia Television. I look at a handful of different perspectives on the topics.
Yeah, that's wise. Yeah.
Because otherwise, it's don't think that you can count on it. And I know a few years back, I had a Facebook friend who was somehow intercepting the feed between CNN and then the satellite. He was 23. He died in a mysterious accident. I really worried about why that was, but he was showing how manipulated was the news. It really wasn't true news at all, and a lot of the on-site news broadcasts that were coming from Libya, they weren't there. They weren't doing what they were doing. It's just kind of amazing. It really, really impacted me to see that. And you see that, they're doing a shoot, and then they get a pizza, and it's looking like they're in a war zone, and in fact, no, they're in a studio. So
yeah, it's manufactured. False reality.
Right. So we have manufactured fear, manufactured all kinds of things. But sometimes there's real things, like California's on fire, and I do look at the news, I look at it, and I try and search other things. So thank you so much for calling that in.
Yeah, and if you can give me a couple more minutes.
Okay.
I read the newspapers. When I was in college, I read six different newspapers every day for 4 years.
Okay.
Newsweek and Time and a whole slew on the Vietnam War and all that stuff every day. And but I look at the Honolulu paper, and there's always important things in there that I'd love to do a piece on on your show sometimes where I just talk about different articles and different publications and what they mean, because I'm pretty perceptive about that. And the other point I want to make is that in communist Russia, after a certain point, where everything's manufactured, the news is manufactured by the government, the Communist Party, and everyone knows that. And so everyone, they already know that everything's phony, whereas America is presented as a independent democratic country with a free press. And because, you know, the press represents the elite, that's not so. And so it is the form of it, you know, the external manifestation of it looks like it's free, but the actual content, what's really going on inside, is not, you know. And anyways, I'll let you guys go, but thank you for all your efforts on the air. So.
Okay, thank you, Andy. Aloha.
Yeah, okay, aloha.
Hi, and hey, when I was listening to what Inspector Dan had to say about the straws, you know, he talked about the, in 1 month, America uses enough plastic straws to circumnavigate the Earth. Well, not that I hardly ever use plastic straws, but if Inspector Dan is listening, it caused me to completely not take the straws that have been offered to me these past couple of times that I have gotten something to drink at a restaurant. All right. Aloha, you're on the air. You're on the air.
Yeah, aloha. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You know, talking about free press, it's really freedom of free of press. And with any freedom, there's kind of a direct relationship to responsibility and accountability. And I think that's the issue with some of the journalism going on today, is that they lost their focus on accountability and the responsibility of being accountable for operating a free press.
I think that's true. Have you followed like the new action moving against net neutrality? Do you have an opinion on that?
The net neutrality. I'm not real up to speed on that, but I'm a little old school. You know, just the press is kind of important to me because my uncle was the managing editor of a large. One of the largest newspapers in Houston, Texas, about 30 years ago. And he was such a great man of integrity. Everybody that worked for him, he told them, you don't take favors. You know, we're journalists. We have an objective viewpoint, and we present the facts. And somehow, and I think it happens, started happening at the institution of higher learning, where people started using journalism as like almost a social engineering tool.
Great phrase. Social engineering tool, I would say that is what it is. And even when we talk about, you know, fake news or whatever, it seems to be a new phrase. You know, in many ways, it's all fake news, you know. And, you know, there's certainly pieces that are accurate. You just got to sit there and look at it as part of the mosaic of knowledge that's coming in and listen with a discerning ear. Because
and that was my point, basically, sorry to interrupt, but I'll let you go.
No problem.
Is that, as with any freedom, I mean, it kind of relates to us all personally. You know, we need to take our freedoms very seriously and treasure them. But, you know, there's a bit of accountability that goes with being free. So
yes.
Keep up the good work. Thank you for your opportunity here.
Okay. Aloha. Thank you for calling in.
Aloha.
You know, and one thing what I notice with our local paper, and I see them working to always do their best, and we get lots of new reporters. So every time you get a brand new reporter, it takes him or her some time to come up to speed and be able to add in context.
Right. So, Felicia, you've been to all of these meetings and to court and everything else. What is the top of your mind? What about the Coco Palms case?
Okay. I can speak on the Coco Palms case for a moment. And that was, you know, I will say that the author of that article in the Garden Island, you know, she did a decent job on that because this is her first week on the island, so she's still definitely learning the context. For people who don't know, in Wailua Nui Ahoano, which is the name, the traditional name for what is the Coco Palms property, they went to court and it was a full day on Friday and likely to be another full day a week from this Friday. And so Noah Espirito Mao and Kamu Hepa, Charles Kamu Hepa, are getting at, this is a civil case, an eject case. And are they coming on? All right, I'm sorry. We got calls coming in. I will come back to this in a moment. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, aloha, Felicia. I was wondering if you could speak to their upcoming court date on the 29th.
Okay, that's what I was talking about.
I have a concern, and maybe you can address this. It's like the last week of the year. It's after Christmas, before New Year's Eve. I'm concerned that if, the appropriate amount of significant community attention isn't paid to this now, that they might try and slip something fast through at the end of the year in the black hole.
My guess is, this is just a guess, probably I shouldn't guess on the radio, I would say...
Well, be careful then. If you're not sure if you should say it, just leave it out.
Well, I was just in the middle of talking about the court case, actually, when you called.
That's what prompted me to call. I'll hang up and listen so you can express your thoughts clearly. All right, aloha.
Aloha. Okay, so, what I really saw in that case, just bringing it to the case, there's three different cases, I believe, that they are going to trial for. One criminal, maybe two criminal, and one civil case. And this was a civil case.
You said they. Who?
They is the protectors, the Kia'i, for Wailua Nui Ahuanu, or the people who are living on the back property there at what was considered the Coco Palms Resort.
And the people actually in court were who?
Are the people who are living back there, as I just got done saying, Noah Espirito Mao and Charles Kamu Hepa. Those are the defendants.
You know what, Felicia, I apologize.
Okay.
Actually, that's a phone call. I'm on the phone with the person who has a question about what you're saying, and I don't hear what you're saying.
Okay, are they here?
Yeah. No.
Okay, that was the last one.
Right.
Okay, so he didn't hear it, and you didn't hear it, but I was saying it. So that's fine. So that's this live radio, and that's what it's about, is call-in show. So Kamu and Noah were pro se defending themselves. Pro se means without a lawyer. Lawyers are very expensive, and then what does happen also sometimes, it's very hard to get a lawyer in a case like this, as it is not always advantageous to the lawyers. But they argued their case, and it basically is what I think it's called an eject motion. And what did get sidelined pretty early on was their speaking about the historical context of Hawaii being taken, in multiple ways. And then also they were talking about the title and that the title report was inaccurate. And I didn't quite understand why the judge threw that out. They let them say their piece and then just said, well, we're not going to be looking at title and we're not going to be looking at the historical context. So in this kind of case, what happens sometimes is we get compartmentalized or separated out these issues, when we're doing policy. And this happens across so many threads. Even when we're looking at environmental impact statements, they can do an environmental assessment of one small piece, then another small piece, then another small piece, instead of looking at the entirety. So, I was really honored to be present at this date, this event, but I would say that it is asking the question of our generation in Hawaii. And basically, the generation that is growing up, they can speak Hawaiian, that's olelo. They have read the documents. They have come of age in a time when there is the internet, when they have access to the real documents. It has been reviewed and taught, and they understand how much of a crime was the overthrow of the Hawaiian monarchy, and that you can look at the displacement that's happened over the decades and where there is injustice. And so the court and our dominant system just says, okay, well, we're all good with it. We're all down with this injustice that happened. And they don't really want to look at it very deeply. So this is where we're having a clash of cultures. And we're having the same clash of cultures around the globe. where the indigenous people are standing up and really being able to say, hey, you know, what made this okay? What made this right? And so, you know, these guys have never really been in court at this level before. So I saw them struggling to, you know, even understand the court procedures and the proceedings. And I felt like the judge was pretty patient with it, but, you know, it's like pro ball against, you know, high school ball. And they both know how to do play, and they both have some real qualities, but the court system is structured about commerce. It's structured about who makes money, who, this is when you're in civil court. It's all about money and commerce. It isn't about culture. It isn't about the environment. It isn't about what's right. And so, you know, we'll see how it keeps moving on. But something that I did write, like what to me was really evident in this, is that because we're only looking at one small piece of a property, and it is a Kuleana piece, it is a land title award, a land grant, we're looking at that piece there. But if you look at the whole property, this is such an extraordinary piece of property with 1,000 years of Ali'i burials and really critical archaeological finds and, you know, the fish pond there. There's so much right there that it's like, you know, if we put like a theme park on top of something like Arlington National Cemetery, would that be okay? Maybe you make a theme park that's all about war, you know, and you say, well, what's the difference? Because that's essentially what's happened there. And these guys are trying to stop it. And it isn't a land grab on their part. This is them jumping in as the lesser of two evils, saying, we need to stop this. And then Tyler Green, who was on the stand a lot of the day, he's the developer, one of the developers. You know, he's like, yeah, I'm, you know, all about the culture, and these guys can sit on the board and they can help define the culture. But the way this wants to, the hotel wants to do a cultural park is basically a hotel draw. It's like a theme park. It's, you know, it doesn't do justice to what is really there. And, you know, it's really, the title on the property is problematic, you know, and they were showing where there had been problems, and they were showing how the same people who did the title search on this property have done poor title searches on other properties. But that didn't get admitted as evidence, and they didn't allow those title people to come to the witness stand. So it was interesting to be watching that. There's a whole lot I could say about this case. I kind of want to bring the guys in here and have them do their speaking because the case is still underway. Larry Rivera was in there, and, you know, the hotel basically brought him in there to be saying, hey, I want this to continue. But when he was in his cross-examination time, you know, the young men were very gentle with him and treated him with a whole lot of respect, but just started to talk story with him. And as he's talking story, you know, he's like, yeah, there's bones here, there's bones there, there's bones everywhere. Everybody knows that, you know. And he was able to be innocently revealing a lot of what they claim isn't really much of an issue there. You know, what the hotel claims or what we're supposed to be hearing. So, I mean, this to me, this case is a microcosm on what is wrong in Hawaii and what's going on in the world. And, you know, do we exonerate the crimes of the past? Is it okay if something wrong happened in the past? And when we look at with that property, you know, the palms themselves, there's like almost 15 acres there that is Department of Land and Natural Resources land. It's state lands that these guys have been able to lease. When I say these guys, this is speculative investors. There's been a number of them have been spinning this and turning it over, and the current ones bought it on a discount from Prudential, I think, was the lender of the property before. Each time, you know, it's sold, you know, so many cents on the dollar. It's flipping of a distressed property. And, you know, they spend, depending on which year, between $4,000 and $8,000 a year to have all that property there that the state really owns when we could take that same amount of money and apply that in a way that true cultural practitioners can be taking care of that piece of property. So Jonathan asked about the 29th, and so that will be a week from this Friday at 8:30 in the morning. I could sense that there was a lot of hope and pressure from the developer that this get dealt with before the end of the year. It probably is on a tax basis or something. You know, it's the end of the calendar year, trying to get it before then. The guys, the defendants, had hoped to push it out to after their trial of another kind. You know, there's several different trials that they're dealing with, and probably if they had a paid attorney, that would come up first. But so a lot was happening there. The 29th, a week from next Friday. It was probably an accident, but the Garden Island had posted out there that it was the 20th, which is tomorrow. So even I just raced down there at the last moment because I thought that the date had been moved because the Garden Island newspaper said that the court case, the trial date was tomorrow. And even when I got down there and you're looking at the signs on the boards outside the courtrooms, they didn't even have it posted. They didn't have it posted outside that courtroom. So there really wasn't, you know, good notification. But I found it and I was in there. Yeah, so the 29th, I'll be there Friday.
I know. I think I have a Christmas party.
Okay. All right. Well, so if people want to call in about that, and again, I'm just being a little sensitive to not saying too much because I want to allow them to reveal that topic on their own. And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And let's hear about Kauai Classics.
World-class chamber music is coming to Kauai. Personal Financial is proud to present the 8th Annual Kauai Classics, Friday, January 5th at St. Michael's Church in Lihue. There are two ticket options, and all proceeds go to the many social service programs, all here on our island, vetted and funded by Kauai United Way. Go to kauaiclassics.org for information and reservations. That's Kauai, KLASSICS.org.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So, when we are talking about that, both the issues of sovereignty or the issues of correcting past injustices, you know, that is something that goes across the globe. We're seeing that in lots of different places. And on this general plan update last week, too, that was actually a very strong day for that discussion. I was in there on Wednesday and Thursday. And what was presented there, I want to give a shout out to three of our council members, Joanne Yukimura, Mason Chalk, and Mel Raposo, all did submit some amendments to this general plan. And so they put in about, you know, roughly they say 200 amendments to how to correct it. So,
have you had a chance to read that?
Yeah, I did. I read it all.
Wow. What highlights?
Well, one highlight was that Princeville, there was a lot of resistance on having the plateau up there above Anini become designated as resort. It has been that before. They wanted to make sure it was designated as resort. The community was really up in arms about it. I would say particularly the young generational community here felt very strongly they did not want another resort up here. When we have been looking at the numbers of visitors, you know, the numbers were really, really below what is reality, you know, and the growth rate on the visitors. And so when something is designated as resort, it creates what's called an entitlement. And so when there is that entitlement, it slows down, it says all these units can be built, or it puts it in perpetuity so it can be sold on that. And so what happened is that they said, you know, all right, we heard the people and we're not going to do it. So it didn't get fought. It didn't anything. It just, they said, okay, well, we won't make it be a resort designation. So they're going to have an ag designation. About 5 years ago, they had something called the Hanalei Club that they were going to be opening, and they worked on that, which was 75 high-end pieces. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of went back to that vision. So it's not like it's going to all of a sudden be, you know, affordable houses or, you know, go, quote, to the people, but it's not going to be more hotels
right.
and timeshare, so it'll be much less impact.
A much smaller number of larger properties, which will be high-end.
High-end, yeah.
Do you know where they're to be located?
Pretty much where they were said to be when it was the Hanalei Club, which is over there near the Prince Golf Course,
mm-hmm.
up between the Prince Golf Course and what is Nini Vistas.
Okay. All right, well, cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't too happy about that. We do not need new cars up there.
And yeah, we're really overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So there's a number of other pieces. And
well, what
I'm going to have you just say something for a minute, because I got to go tell my other people to be quiet because I can't concentrate.
Okay.
Share something.
All right, Felicia wants me to just wrap here for a second. When you're hanging with Felicia and you're having a good time, you know that you got to say something that rhymes, because Felicia went running out to do a chore. And until then, kids, I'm going to be a bore, saying more and more of this courtroom stuff. Oh, we don't need no more huffity-puff. Felicia, sit down, take the mic. Because I'm going to lose it like I have. I can
okay,
mic.
Okay, we are just like a giant big family here. And so lots of people having fun. The rain is happening. And but now I can think again. I can hear. So, all right. So Princeville, that was a big piece.
Big piece.
And so that was an early start. And so everybody was really stoked on that. And then I want to give a shout out to Mel Rozzo, because he, I felt like he did a good job of hearing the people, and so he stepped out beyond what he normally does, actually. I think he took a big hit for it, but there was a few pieces in here. One was there's people in the community asking for the consideration of the definition of moratorium in the general plan.
Okay.
And a moratorium can mean stopping things, you know, but this definition talks about, you know, how detrimental it can be and that it really needs to be used as a last resort. But something that worked out well is that Mauna Kea Trask, he spent quite a bit of time researching as to whether it was legal, because what was the case the last time they're talking is that it wasn't legal.
That's a moratorium in regard to what?
A moratorium in regard to certain types of development. Like maybe they could say, we don't have the capacity for sewage treatment, so we need to do a moratorium in not creating more things that would have effluent and overburden this existing sewage treatment plant.
Okay.
You could have a moratorium for a number of different reasons. I would say that the county planning department was arguing that it had to be extraordinary, not just a reason, you know, because when you do a moratorium, it can really hurt certain businesses. I mean, it can almost kill a business. It can kill a plan, like people put a lot of investment in, then they have to hold out. So there was a lot of acknowledgement and concern of why to not recklessly do that. But when we, say, put in a lot more hotels and elements like that, and we don't have the road capacity or the sewer capacity, or, you know, like you can see, we can't fix our roads, right? Our roads have got potholes all over the place. We are, I can't remember the numbers all offhand right now, but we have about actually, I'd better be looking at the real numbers because I have them written down, but we have about 20% of the money capacity for what is required for the roads.
Okay. So that, yeah.
So
with the money we have right now, we can only take care of 20% of the needs in terms of the road.
Of the road repairs. Road repairs we need that we know that we need to have. We have about 20% of the funding for that.
So they redefined moratorium.
They really defined it well. And then we're looking at, like, when would that ever need to be done? And it was kind of an interesting thing because, you know, I happen to be friends with some of those cowboys, but some cowboys came in, and my guess is that it might have been sent in. But saying, you know, that the moratorium would be bad for their ranching. But, in fact, it was exactly the opposite because there are agriculture pieces of property that there's something in there that says provisional ag, which really means provisional urban, because they make it provisional ag because that could be then urban or a resort. It's like, okay, we can build up. So it really, in trying to stop more resorts, it really, the big concern is more resorts because the place feels overwhelmed. So can that possibility happen? The other piece that he shared out, you know, he brought it out because it was being said by the people quite a bit, is on the waters, is to be looking at both Western science and Ahupua'a land management.
Is that right?
Yeah, and so I appreciated Mike DeHelig. He's the division head for the planning department, but he said, well, I don't actually understand ancient Hawaiian stuff. Well, it isn't ancient. It was ancient and it's present. You know, Ahupua'a land management is, you know, mountain to the sea. How do we make sure that the water continues to flow? Doesn't mean some of it can't get diverted, and certainly the Hawaiians diverted some of the land, but they never stopped that baseline stream flow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that had just come out in the Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting about the North Fork of the Wailua River, and has been also in a facilitated settlement for the Waimea River. Waimea River is supposed to get, I think, 45% of the water back. You know, it's been almost entirely diverted for 110 years. So as we start to replenish the aquifers, that is good for the groundwater. It's good for everything. And these waters, a number of these rivers have been moved. So even Hulia'a Stream got mentioned here, and so there was
can I
pushback.
See and a moratorium. Are you still on that?
Well, it's the same. That? The moratorium, I moved from moratorium to water, but you could ask about the moratorium.
Well, about water as well. In terms, it has there been much mention in all of this about sea level rise and putting some kind of moratorium on building at some level, you know, some projected level by year, whatever.
Yes and yes.
Yeah.
So sea level rise, that is definitely in more of these pieces. I think that was, I got to look here, from planning. The planning department, they put in a number of pieces, like, so I'm jumping here, but that I'm just looking at what they had. They talked about managing the average daily visitor count. We've done many shows on this.
Nice.
So they're responding positively on that they're going to change those things.
Did they say any suggested ways that they might actually achieve that?
Well, at this point, what we're doing is writing the general plan update. So, you know, they added words in here that says many feel that the current level of tourism growth on Kauai is excessive and as a result creates negative social environmental impact. For example, the Kauai Tourism Strategic Plan noted that when the average daily visitor count exceeds 25,000, that there is a notable decline in both visitor experience and residential quality of life. And it says, in order to deal with tourism impacts, government and the resort industry will need to collaborate and engage in tourism management. One important step is to actively monitor and assess visitor impacts on infrastructure and facilities. By quantifying impacts, the county and the state can better plan to control the impacts of excessive tourism. Tourism management includes a range of methods, from increasing the supply of recreational opportunities and facilities, reducing public use of certain resources, and changing visitor behavior through education and signage. They have this thing about dealing with excessive tourism also means managing the supply of visitor units. So that's the kind of area where a moratorium matters, you know? So,
you know, one interesting thing they mention in there is supplying an alternative forms of recreation for tourists. And it reminded me of Peru with the Inca Trail, the ancient pathway between Cusco and Machu Picchu,
mm-hmm.
so trampled by tourists,
right.
just, you know, lines and lines of them. So they were actually developing an alternative Inca Trail, the new Inca Trail, that was to be in as spectacular a setting, but actually be better arranged altogether and not trampled and better managed from day one.
Yeah. Right. So they didn't get that deep into it here. You know, it's like a big jump to be changing the visitor numbers in here, be changing the wording, and, you know, that's part of with, like, a moratorium. Like, the planning department didn't support the moratorium language at all, but, you know, they aren't actually in very far apart in what they're suggesting. You know, a change did happen from both what the planning department said and then, like, what Mel Raposo's suggestion was coming in. And so it's like, okay, how do we stop this? And that's like when the cowboy crew came in, they were acting like the moratorium was going to shut down their cattle pastures. But it was exactly the opposite. It is protecting the cattle pastures and trying to limit the visitor growth, you know, growth of the visitor industry. I'm looking in here to about sea level rise. So what they did is they did have inundation maps for 1 foot and 3 foot, but now they added a 6 foot scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And they have quite a bit of language in here, added language in here on coastal zone management program and the special management areas and needing to preserve, protect, and restore that coastal zone area.
Hmm.
And that is, you know, influenced very much by sea level rise.
Right.
So they definitely added that in. They added in, you know, the additional rental units that, you know, is trying to get a little bit of more density on the housing.
So we should expect in the final plan maps of what the island would look like with a 1 foot sea level rise and a 3 foot sea level rise and a 6 foot sea level rise?
Yes. I mean, this one has, the one that's sitting on the desk in front of me has 1 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
So then they would be adding a 6 foot, I believe.
Ah, okay.
So they do look at that. And that also, though, that's where putting in this idea of possibly a moratorium, that would be an example. If they were to say this area should be in a development moratorium because it's very vulnerable to sea level rise, like the Coco Palms area would be an example of that, right? Because even in the old days, when the big waves came in, you know, it came in right into the property there, and that was, you know, 50 years ago. It was getting that, so that's a wetland area. So, kind of getting back to this piece about speaking of Ahupua'a land management structures, that is a very big jump to be adding that in there. Because, and that to me, when I have complained that this plan doesn't do enough justice to our host culture that has had 1,000 years of demonstrating how to live resiliently here, one of the most core elements that disrupted all of that was this movement of the water, where the movement of the water was taking more than was needed. And then the plantations are, for the most part, closed, so we don't need to have all that water be moving now. We have houses, and we certainly, as citizens, use more water per person. But just to begin to be talking about that, so that was big. And then little tiny things that I kind of liked is, like, for the buses, this was on Mel's one, is having luggage and surfboards, trying to be able to put luggage and surfboards on the buses. You know, seeing that in that piece there. I mean, there was a number of pieces. Mason Chalk had put a handful of ones in that honor Hawaiian cultural practices. I really believe Mehana Vaughn, Dr. Mehana Vaughn, had suggested these pieces. What happens is that the council members have to be the ones to submit it, but they can take what the people have said. So that's what's happened here. But they did listen. It was actually, it was pretty good that they made as much changes as they did. They didn't make everything, but they made a lot. And they're in the process of passing. I didn't stay to the bitter end for a Friday, but that went well. So, again, shout-outs to Mason, Joanne, and Mel for taking the time and doing the work of offering amendments to go into that general plan update, as well as the planning department themselves. And so it's good that everybody's working together. Mm-hmm. I would say those are all pretty good wins. And it did move in what to me is a rightful direction. You know, still what's glaring in there is how do we deal with housing? And there was a whole piece that was put in, a whole set on the housing, but it needs to get reworked. So that one didn't come under deep discussion. It was looked at and said, okay, we need to do more work on that one. I think that Mel Raposo, yeah, I'm looking at it. He put it in, but that was a group that was working on what they call net new affordable housing units, and, you know, treating it as an emergency. Like, what was said is, like, if a hurricane came and hit and 25% of our people ended up being houseless, that would be an emergency. And we would create some methodology to support that. But since this is a chronic problem, it's allowed to fester. And that, you know, kind of ties into, I'm happy to come back to some more local stuff, too, and I want to invite more callers, but, you know, like a little bit more I could speak on, like, on the Charter Review Commission and pieces like that. But when I'm thinking about the houseless challenge, it brings me to some of these national issues that I looked up, and I looked on a number of different news sites, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show. You know, it can be selective what is said and shared. And but there is an average over the last 10 years, what I saw is 14 million people a year on average are left homeless from our storms and fires and things like that around the world. It's very profound. And like, one thing that I saw in Northern California, I tried to look at how many people have been displaced in America, and it's actually wasn't very easy to find any sort of calculated numbers. I looked on a lot of sites. I tried to use a bunch of different questions to be Google searching that. And I didn't find any tally. To me, that's a very important tally to be looking at. But it said, like, Northern California, they estimate 90,000 people have been displaced from their homes from the storms and the fires. It's a lot.
So you're saying a good percentage of those are simply going to become homeless chronically?
I didn't say that.
No.
I said that that's how many people have been displaced by the fires and the storms.
Okay.
And but that adds to the mix. And so, like, in fact, though, for the chronically homeless, that makes their plight much harder, because when people are on these waiting lists to get into a place or trying to get into a place, a landlord is a lot more likely to take in a family or a person who's been paying $3,000 a month rent for the last 3 years, and, in fact, insurance is helping to cover their costs, things like that. You know, more of the people that are taking up the available housing are the people who have been displaced, who have lost their houses. So it takes an already strikingly needing market and putting a whole new layer of people needing a place to be, right? So it's putting more pressure. It certainly isn't creating more housing. It's creating more people in need. So some of them might become chronic. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
So storms and fires and such like that.
Storms and fires across the United States, and then we see what's happened in Puerto Rico. It looks like Puerto Rico is still struggling to get their power on. I know in Kilauea, when we had a Niki, it was 2.5 months before power came back on. It looks like it might be quite a bit longer than that in Puerto Rico. But there's a lot of challenges. And, you know, it's a really tough situation.
And people should just burrow underground. I was just digging holes. There's all these problems with building.
Well, yeah, you know, as I was looking for these things, too, probably a lot of the listeners know this already, but I was kind of like, oh, to see that, like, a handful of these California fires and the Denver fire was estimated to be started by houseless people on accident, you know, just in their efforts to keep warm, like the Bel Air fire. You know, people are living in storm drains and things like that, and they have a fire in there, and then it catches.
So, but Mel Raposo has some suggestions, yeah?
Oh, yeah, back to the general plan?
Yeah, so what are the suggestions?
Oh, you mean on the housing ones?
Yeah, so you're starting to treat it like a crisis.
He put this in, and this came from a committee who was working the Community Coalition of Kauai on affordable housing. And so that is looking at, you know, how to determine how deep it is. We have a caller. Let's take that first. Aloha, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Felicia. It's Marge Dente.
Hey, Marge.
Last week when I called in after the KIUC meeting, I didn't have time to talk about something else that got brought up at the meeting and also an article in the paper about it. KIUC is going to be doing a survey by the Ward Research Corporation starting, starting soon, the 22nd. That can't be the right date. They don't have the right date in here. But anyway, hello?
Hello, I'm listening.
Yeah, hi. What the survey is about is that KIUC, being a utility company, not just an electric company, is thinking about going into the broadband business. Mm. That means telephone, TV, internet, yada, yada.
Oh, yeah, they called me. I took that survey.
Oh, what kind of questions did they ask?
Well, I mean, one was what kind of service would I like to see? You know, I'm sure some people really wouldn't want to be bombarded with Wi-Fi signal everywhere they go, but I said I'd love it if they have, like, they have, I don't know, is it Portland or somewhere? The whole city is just covered in Wi-Fi. You get a free signal everywhere. You know, take large population areas and just give them Wi-Fi. And I also said, take it into the rural areas. I can't believe we still don't have reliable
internet?
You know, internet, yeah, in like as close as Wainiha, you know, whatever,
right.
Like that, yeah. So,
yeah.
But yeah, they wanted to know a lot about me as a consumer, though, too. You know, would I pay more for better speed? You know, how am I satisfied with my speed? You know, what would I take a package that's this or that, and that sort of thing, too.
Okay, well, did they explain what broadband actually means and what might be included?
No.
Let me say, you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox, Felicia and Marshall. Marge is on the phone with us talking about KIUC. Continue.
Yeah, so I'm sort of curious, because when I read this article, I thought, well, what the hell is broadband, number one, being a dinosaur like I am? And what would this include? What do they have in mind? Well, of course, the survey probably would give them a better idea of what people need, as you pointed out, Marshall. So, but because I have an unlisted phone number, I will not be called. And I don't think it's a really good idea to, they were just going to call 200 people, but I'm not sure. And so, and this is over the holiday weekend, you know, or the holiday week, actually. And I'm thinking, what a terrible time to do a survey of this importance, in my opinion. And so I expressed that at the meeting last Tuesday. And I wanted to bring this up last week, but there wasn't time. So anyway, they are doing the survey. I'm just really curious as to what it might cost. Would it be more than the current servers like Spectrum and Hawaiian Telcom and whoever else is doing these services? One thing that was pointed out by one of the board members when I questioned this after the meeting was that if the KIUC has this kind of service, we would be able to set our own prices and not be at the, you know, winsome responsibility from a much bigger company like Spectrum or Time Warner. And so, to me, that's an advantage, because hopefully our co-op would keep, you know, would provide all the services that people say they want and will be able to pay for, but Are we going to be able to compete with the other prices on the island? So, did they, Marshall? Did they imply anything in their questioning about the pricing?
No, they didn't imply so much as ask what I'd be willing to pay for. You know, and not in specifics. They were all like the five choices, you know, very satisfied, such and such, very interested, such and such interested. So, no, they definitely didn't give any information except to, what was implied was that they were doing their market study, market research, and figuring what might fly and what might not.
Yeah, so all this stuff was brought up in, when the co-op was started back in 2000, whatever it was. And I brought it up again about a year ago, wondering if there had been any talk about going into this kind of service. And a year ago, the answer was no. But in the meantime, apparently there is an opportunity to take advantage of something. This was described to me by the board, one board member, and he didn't explain what it was. So there may be like a federal grant or something that they've caught wind of. If somebody from KIUC is listening, this would be helpful information, in my opinion, and they could call in. So I'm not upset about this at all. I think it's probably a very good idea, and I'm glad that our utility company is, in fact, considering it. So
I know that the Hawaiian Tel just did a new fiber optic cable. Also, I saw them out there on the power lines and putting them up.
Uh-huh.
So it might be that, you know, there's Oceanic, Time Warner, or I think it's called Spectrum now, and then Hawaiian Tel, and then it sounds like maybe KIUC. Hey, I'm curious. Have they yet been talking very much about the water storage battery? I would like to have them in here. I did, in fact, invite them. I would like to get them in here to talk about the water storage battery so we can all be a part of it and, you know, hopefully everybody be stoked with whatever ends up happening. And so the broadband piece would probably be a good discussion to have on air in here, too.
As well, by the water storage battery, are you talking about the west side where it's pumped up to the water, comes down, goes through a turbine, and then goes gets pumped up by solar back up to the reservoir.
Mm-hmm. That was like Carol Bain's idea, you know, because we have, we're like at capacity, like on a high sun day, you know, we don't need to be running any of the generators.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh,
so
okay,
like.
So, yeah, this was discussed, and as I reported last week, well, I didn't report last week, but you guys got press release while you were on the air last week saying that that KIUC has to comply with the requirements brought out at the
Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and well, of course that was with the North Fork thing, so that was different. But yeah, the EIS and EIS has been determined by KIUC needs to happen for all those things.
The environmental impact statement. I think
another big ask,
I don't know that they would have brought it up at the Kauai Island Utility Cooperative meeting, but a big ask at the Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting is really looking at the fact that the biggest benefactor of that water diversion is actually Grove Farm, you know, far more than Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. So does Grove Farm actually need a permit and an EIS? Because they are really the main water user.
Mm-hmm.
So did Grove Farm come up at all? I think you said that somebody spoke up in the meeting and actually called that out, that Grove Farm and AMB
have been doing the water grab.
So yeah. Was there any kind of dialogue amongst the board members about that?
No. The policy now is not to respond to any comments or questions during the testifying procedure of the meeting.
So it's gotten to be like the county council. I have you know, it's pretty disappointing.
Yeah.
In fact, we were just, Marshall and I were talking about the Charter Review Commission meeting, too. Like, that was, I honestly, I will say, this is a little bit off topic, but it's kind of related. I think something that we could consider is that maybe 4 of the 7 council members should be full-time instead of part-time, because it certainly doesn't seem like it should be a second gig after a straight job. You know, it requires so much focus, and these guys aren't paid enough, typically, that they don't have to have another job. Most of them have a main job, and then they do the county council. And I think that it can be problematic that people aren't able to focus enough. And what I see in this last 2 sessions is their big thing is just wanting to get out of there quickly. 5 of them have another pretty demanding job. So they don't allow questions anymore. When somebody testifies, okay, that's it. You know, they're not supposed to be questioned. So people who can come forward that have really quite a lot of knowledge bank, maybe they only get 3 minutes, and then that's it. And mm-hmm. It seems like it's really, it doesn't matter what people have to say when you have that mindset, you know. And so maybe we need to have it be, you know, a bigger job.
Why only 4 of 7?
Why only 4 of 7 and in my suggestion?
Mm.
Because some people don't want to give up their careers, because sometimes people, like I'm thinking, if you had 4 for 4 years and 3 just as it is right now, 2 years, and, you know, then that allows for more junior people to come in. You know, they get paid a little less. I mean,
well, the details could be worked out.
The details could be worked out, yeah.
Well, to answer your question about the West Side project, whether or not that's going to have an EIS, I'm not exactly sure. I don't have my notes in front of me from that meeting, but the Jolie Corporation or company, a man and a woman are on that project. They've been working on it. They've been contracted by KIUC.
Is that Jason? His name's
Pardon
Jason.
Me?
His name is Jason.
Jason and Dawn. Yeah. And very nice people,
mm-hmm.
and they come in every once in a while and give pretty good reports during the open meeting, but I know that they do stay sometimes for the executive session afterward. So I think some major decisions are made at that point, and then they're not really broadcast as to what the decisions have been in any detail. So I have problems with that. There's very little transparency in this organization, and in my opinion, as I've always stated, that it's never been run as a co-op. It's always been run as a private for-profit corporation. Even though it's non-profit, but it's not being run as a co-op. So, you know, I don't want to go on and on about that, but it's something that I think all of us should consider as we proceed into more projects, you know. Once the survey comes in, who's going to decide whether or not we go into broadband? Is it going to be just the board and the CEO, or will it come before the membership to make a vote on that?
Did you suggest that at the meeting? Did you ask that at the meeting?
No, I didn't, because I wasn't sure what the broadband was all about. Even though I brought it up, I couldn't get any answers, of course, so... at the meeting, because they don't answer questions or anything like that now.
Marshall, could you look it up really quick? What's broadband? I mean, I think broadband is, like what we're saying, it would include internet and all of that, but I'm going to have him look up a definition and then
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, and I think it does, but if you look it up in, the dictionary, it's not up to date at all.
In telecommunications, broadband is wide bandwidth data transmission, which transports multiple signals and traffic types. The medium can be coaxial, cable, optical fiber, radio, or twisted pair. In the context of internet access, broadband is used to mean any high-speed internet access that is always on and faster than traditional dial-up access.
So basically, basic cable, you know.
Yeah, it's basic cable, so it's not going to include phone service.
Maybe. I doubt it would include phone, but I would think they would have said phone.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for calling in.
Well, anyway, a late update, but I just wanted to get that out so and people can start thinking about it and know that they may get a phone call to do the survey.
Okay, and I hope people do the surveys, and I hope that people do actually show up and participate, because that's the one thing that I find is that there is a small group of dedicated people who keep the focus and keep those in power, you know, responding to the people, because, you know, they're just as overwhelmed as the rest of us. And if, you know, nobody else offers their opinion, they're just going to go with their own. So they don't have to be evil to not be asking, but it's pretty evident that the ask is rarely there, and we need people to be paying attention and participating. So, Marge, thank you so much for paying attention and participating.
Happy to do.
Okay, Merry Christmas to you.
You too. Happy holidays. Aloha.
Aloha. Okay, and so Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and Edible Hawaiian Islands.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456, packyourtrash.org, and saverseas.us.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We appreciate what Marge had to share. And then Marshall had also asked me about housing on the general plan update. So I mentioned a little bit that Mel Raposo had submitted things from the Kauai Community Coalition, but Joanne Yukimura also had done quite a bit on housing. This is something that she's focused on for a long time, and so she had, you know, quite a number of areas in here about housing. So at least that we are seeing that there is some focus and awareness of how critical that is and where they can potentially be getting some new money. But, you know, I mean, yeah, new money in new places, but it is a persistent problem. I will say that. So I do want to say thank you to Joanne Yukimura, Mason Chalk, and Mel Raposo for, you know, interfacing with the public and taking the time to actually put in some amendment suggestions. Errol Kaneshiro did do a little bit there in that he actually submitted Mason's work and the planning department's work. So that was an important piece, and we did have a full council, and I appreciate the extra effort that they are doing. The Department of Health, I've been pleased that they have done a public service announcement on rat lungworm disease, so I'm going to play that.
Rat lungworm disease is a risk statewide, but we can all help right in our own neighborhoods by keeping our yards free of slugs and snails, using traps to catch rats and disposing of them properly, and always rinsing fresh fruits and vegetables thoroughly and carefully before eating or cooking. Let's work together to prevent rat lungworm disease. Find more information and tips at health.hawaii.gov, sponsored by the Hawaii State Department of Health.
And mahalo, Department of Health, for, you know, looking at that and helping us to be conscious and aware. This is another thing that we have put a lot of focus on this show, to be able to help people to be careful with what they're doing with their food. So 826-7771 is the number to be calling. And Marshall, one of the things that I've been looking at a national level is, like, the closing of the retail stores. You know, that was something pretty interesting to me as I was looking around on housing issues. Looking around on housing issues that, like, as I was looking at that 25% of the malls in the United States are said to be closing in the next year.
Wow.
Or in 2017.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that the Amazon effect? Or?
Well, meaning people are shopping online.
Shopping online, yeah.
I think shopping online is a really big piece of it. Many people are shopping online, but it used to be people would just simply be recreational shoppers.
Mm-hmm.
And
Right. Go to the malls is social outing.
Going to the mall is a social outing. And so that is happening a whole lot less. And so I think that that's a big indicator of, you know, a change in culture in the country of the United States anyway. And so there's a lot of ideas of, like, how do we repurpose all those malls? To me, here on this island, we could possibly be creating micro units. I know in some of the malls in the United States that's happening. And in fact, when they do make micro units in these places and turn them essentially into what can be crisis housing, there is also then a market for the food and the stores and the things that could be there.
Wrong number, Felicia.
No.
Somebody called with the wrong number.
I know. I was,
yeah. So you're talking about malls and houselessness. Were you putting it together? I saw an article where they suggested that they house people in empty malls.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good way of doing that. To me, it also makes sense to be doing schools in empty malls. And then another thing that is being used is something like Amazon, that those big internet retailers that works out well, you know, for facilities for doing that.
Oh, right. They can put little, transporter belts, whatever you call them, on the old escalators and make it look just like a giant Christmas elf shop, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you just came back from a trip. What did you notice in the continental United States?
Well,
did it feel much like what's going on here? Like when I try and look up our problems?
No, it's a different world.
Okay, tell me, because I haven't been there in so long.
Well, I mean, I don't want to pick on the place where I was, but I think it's like much of the world, and here even, but there to a greater extent. Say the Christmas lights, right? You got to have Christmas lights, and tons of them. And a big outing is to go look at the houses that have huge numbers of Christmas. And I know that happens here, too, but I just don't see them everywhere. And the thing is, what happens when you break or when a bulb on a Christmas light strand burns out? You know, like you might fix that once, but probably the second time, you know, if you're out of spares, I think most people just throw that away with one burned out bulb. You know, I'm seeing this like, oh, throw that one out, get a new one, they're cheap as anything. There's mountains of burned out Christmas lights. Yeah, and that, and like the huge blow up things in the yard, and big old blow up snowman, and I know it's going to develop a little tiny leak and just hiss to the ground, and then it's going to go in the trash. All that vinyl, there's probably a motor there that blows that thing up. I'm just like, oh my goodness.
So you're seeing a lot of waste.
A lot of waste and a ton of consumerism. It's like, how do we really celebrate this holiday? And I think it boils down a lot of times on what we buy. What are we buying for them? What are we getting for those? Yeah. The crazy decorations. Well, that's one thing I saw. Merry Christmas.
Did you see much in the way of the problems that we were just talking about? Like, is the East Coast having much of these storms? Is it having much houselessness?
There's an earthquake, and it was in Delaware. There's an earthquake in Delaware. I didn't feel it, but it's like in the news, and people are on Facebook. Oh, do you feel it? I'm like, I ask my mother, who, you know, has lived in that general vicinity for 74 years, when was the last time you felt an earthquake here? She's like, man, maybe there was one in high school or something. Earthquakes don't happen there.
And then did anybody get hurt?
No, nobody. It wasn't that big. But still, it's like, yeah, an earthquake.
But how's the economy? Is it seemingly strong and vibrant? Is, you know, like I was talking to a few people lately who are feeling like, God, I can't afford to be here on Kauai anymore. Some of whom have always lived here and are being displaced. Some who've maybe only lived here for a decade or two or three, and feeling like they can't hold on. You know, was it a place where there is people have traction? Does it seem like people are able to make a living there and be able to have a home?
No, well, you know, it's pretty segregated, really. You know, there are, I would say the bulk of people are just sort of comfortable and have enough to do their normal level of Christmas shopping. And the highways are like packed, jammed full of vehicles going distant places and things like that. But then in a small a city or small town or whatever, there are areas where, yeah, people either don't have a place to live or they don't have parents, say, or, you know, a dinner to come home to, or, you know, nothing out of the usual, but sure, there are people in need, people in real need.
Well, I have a song I was just going to play that was kind of right in front of me, which is John Lennon, Happy Christmas. I remember when this came out. Was actually the season that he transitioned out of this life. I'm going to play it. Let's see if it's coming up.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so this is Christmas,
hour is over. That would be a really wonderful Christmas piece. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. Yes, I just wanted to respond kind of to Marshall's recent trip, and yes, I just came back from one and fleeing from the Christmas confusion and overwhelmingness. But a friend of mine was saying, well, one of the wonderful things about all the lights is because it's getting darker and the day's shorter,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, bringing up all this issues about darkness. And so the lights are promising, you know, this is a passage, and the lights are to celebrate that passage and the light coming back after darkness. And so it's a celebration of joy for that light coming back into our lives.
That's a nice, upbeat way of framing it. I know the town where I lived when I went to high school, Prescott, Arizona, you know, we had snow there, so we would have the white Christmas, and Prescott really did the Christmas lights everywhere, and it did definitely have very much a feeling of joy and magic.
Did you have those little the candles in the paper bags? The luminarias, is that what they call it?
They had those too.
Yeah, they're really beautiful.
Yeah, they're really beautiful.
Thank you so much for calling.
So it's just a celebration, and why everybody gets so excited is like, oh, the days are getting shorter, it's getting colder. It's like, wow. But it's a promise that, you know, there is life after this life.
So, right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that.
Yes, I appreciate that.
All right.
Aloha. Merry Christmas.
Aloha.
For me, I have a 2-year-old nephew living with me, Kaleo, and Kaleo Cowden. And that makes Christmas really fun.
Mm.
You know, the sense of wonder that young children have, you know, about anything from a turtle to a truck to a big bug to mud, you know, whatever is just ordinary is extraordinary to a young mind starting to think about things. And so I've been having fun watching his joy with the Christmas lights in my house. I did, and then his mother, my sister-in-law, you know, she did a really beautiful job on helping to adorn the home and the area, and I like to watch his amazement. You know, it's really important to feel joy, and if a light makes that work, you know, it's good.
Yeah, sure. And that is it's the same idea of the Yule log, yeah? Make a big old fire in the dead of winter and stand around, enjoy the light and heat and warmth. And
And I know last Saturday, Waimea had their Christmas parade, and in Kilauea, we had a really nice party with really good music. And, you know, there's such a nice sense of community in our town. I think around the island there's that, you know, in a lot of different places. And so I know I'm really thankful to have that right in my space.
Yeah, I guess this is our Christmas show, isn't it, Felicia?
This is our Christmas show.
Oh, right, I got to get happy. Merry Christmas, Felicia. Hey, have you ever had really good eggnog? You know, made from scratch?
I'm actually not a big eggnog fan.
Yeah.
Have you had good eggnog?
Yes. It has to sit overnight and this whole deal. It's an art.
It's an art. It's an art. So, hey, you were going to tell me about CERT. I know you're into CERT, and last week you were wanting to say something, and I didn't give you enough time.
Okay. There's another course coming up. This one is in Lihue. This is the Community Emergency Response Team, and these workshops are being done through the Kauai Fire Department. And so there will be a series of 6 classes from 5:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. on January 10th, the 17th, the 24th, the 31st, February 7th, and February 14th. This class will graduate on Valentine's Day. So it's going to be at the Kauai Fire Department Training Center. You can go to kauai.gov/cert to register for the program, For more information, you can contact KFDCert at kauai.com. So that's as in Kauai Fire Department Community Emergency Response Team, KFDCert at kauai.gov, or call 808-645-0661.
And you've really enjoyed being a part of that, yes?
Yeah, it's great. You know, there's a meeting once a month, and so you sort of, you know, keep in touch and doing ongoing training. And it's, yeah, you know, it teaches you to be prepared for a disaster situation or even a sort of light disruption of affairs, you know, a situation where traffic control is needed or some sort of help like that. And it's nice to know that there's some kind of plan in place, you know. There's all kinds of scenarios that could happen where the first responders just aren't going to be able to be here. So to have a group of people who even just know each other and have a basic bit of training and can communicate, it's going to go a long way.
Yeah, and it seems like it's a good camaraderie, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and the Christmas party's coming up. That's probably the best part.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Tell us.
Well,
Christmas party for the
community emergency response.
So is that the 29th event?
No, that's actually where I live.
Oh,
I know all kinds of parties. Are you have all kinds of parties or more meetings?
You know, all of the above. Hey, you know, one nice thing, like I'm looking outside as we're seeing the rain come down in the forest up here, the jungle of Kauai Community Radio in Princeville. It's actually a beautiful little spot where we are nestled away up here, KKCR. And I'm looking at the rain, feeling thankful for the rain. There was so much rain today, but, you know, this morning there was a fire at Sam's Ocean View Restaurant and Bar in Kapaa. And fortunately, there were, no injuries, and it's great that there was a lot of rain because they were able, you know, it helped put the fire out, right? So it was mostly in the restaurant's kitchen and attic. Hopefully that'll be open soon, but the damages were estimated to be about $100,000. But, you know, there's a hostel right next door, and that was spared, and, you know, many good things like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
So what else, what other meetings have you been to in the last week or so, Felicia? What's hot?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I went to a wonderful wedding on a farm. No, that was beautiful. That was hot.
Oh, is that in Mauloa?
That was in Mauloa. Cy Whitlock got married to Shelley.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, that's the Whitlock's Mauloa Organica'a, and been friends with him since he was a little boy, and that was wonderful. If people would like to call in, it's KKCR 826-7771. And also we can, I got another little Christmas song here. Shows my age. This is Queen. Oh, and we might have a call or two.
Aloha,
so,
Aloha,
so I might just take this call.
Uh-huh.
Are we taking the call? No. Okay.
Aloha, would you like to come here?
Okay. Aloha, you're on the air.
Oh, God bless Community Radio.
Thank you.
Good to hear you guys. Good to hear you guys on the radio. I was just calling in to think of the reference of the solstice and significance of the solstices and the equinoxes.
Is that the 21st?
Well, yeah, the 21st, and so Thursday, I think, and just sort of like a reference point for a lot of indigenous people, also like the Hawaiians, I think they're doing the Makuhiki Festival for that, too.
Oh, good.
So just different parts of the year where they take different things are going on in the year, so they have different different things they practice or ceremonies and things, too. But they always try and look at those days, the equinoxes and solstices, as a time of, like, reflection to see where they come from the last one that they're at. And, so in a good way, you know, just to balance yourself and, like, oh, here you got the notch right there. The notch, and then check in with yourself, and then keep going.
Equal time of the night and the day. Does it work
out? Yeah, so one of the solstice now, which is like the longest night.
Okay. So
that's the equinox.
That's the equinox. This is the winter solstice.
And then another solstice, and then another equinox.
Right, right.
I'm and just as a good, you know, if you're on mainland, then you see all the different colors and the whatever is going on in that season, you know, and it can be matched with a, you know, whatever's going on. It's a little more difficult out here, but it is raining much. That's wintertime out here. So.
Yes, it's a beautiful rain.
But it's good to hear you guys and all cheering up in Christmassy time and solstice time and the celebration time and just thinking about that, you know, taking a reflection of balance. It's good to always take a little moment and go,
Well, thank you. And
I appreciate you guys on the radio, and I always look forward to hearing people calling and hear what you guys have to say in between.
Thank you so much.
That was great.
Thank you so much.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Have you ever seen the Aurora Borealis?
You know, I have not. Here, let me get this call.
Okay. I have never seen that. That's something I've always wanted to see. You know, it's an extraordinary event that I see in the images, in the pictures, and I've seen some people being posting, and I know that happens mostly in the summertime, but it makes me, when we're talking about all this, think about the changes in the seasons.
Okay.
And, okay, well, I'm going to play a song. Coming up.
Okay.
All right. Oh, my love, please share our fears. Oh, my friend, please hide our hopes and fears. Oh,
Okay, and we had a request for This Is Christmas by John Lennon, but thank you, caller, for listening in, and I just played that song before this one, so I probably can't play it again, but John Lennon's This Is Christmas is a really, really good song. So, Marshall, you got a call in with a broadband article?
Yes, there is an article that's relevant to broadband regulations in rural places. I'm going to go ahead and post this to your Facebook page and also to the KKCR Facebook page because it's a little bit much to read, but it has to do with a court case. Rural areas hoping for internet access faced a setback Wednesday when a federal court decided that the Federal Communications Commission doesn't have the power to block state laws that hinder access to cheap, publicly managed broadband service. So that's probably
part of the whole net neutrality piece. And the Federal Communications Commission, they basically detoothed themselves. It's kind of amazing what's happening at a national level and some of the politics going on. I think sometimes when we gut government, it leaves it open for privatization of government services, but I'm not sure that that is necessarily a good thing. Some things don't do best to be privatized.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading an article in The Guardian, which is an English newspaper, about, you know, what is happening in Kansas, because Kansas at a state level has had a tax structure like what is being decided upon in Congress, which is pretty drastic change in how we do taxation.
Right.
And in Kansas, which has had a rather robust economy in a decade or two ago, is in really, really bad shape, you know, that it hasn't worked well to be doing more of that, what they call supply-side economics. That's what it was called in the Reagan era, when you basically give a big tax break to people who are pretty well off, thinking, all right, you'll get the trickle-down spend. It, you know, doesn't necessarily seem to work well on that.
Are they even clinging to that argument anymore? It's, like, so thin.
Yeah. So let's just, we've got another caller, and we'll take this call. Aloha, you're on the air.
Can I put you on the air?
Yeah. Put them on the air. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. It's Greg. I just wanted to follow up with that link to Marshall that you read about the electric utilities offering broadband services.
Sure.
And just a little bit of technical background on that, that it's actually a way that they can provide a full set of broadband services at a lower price using their existing rights-of-way and poles. And the article that Marshall tried to summarize there was actually saying that despite that court ruling, there is a way that the local utilities can get around that by saying they're offering broadband as a utility service, like they're offering electrical services, and it's
okay. So the way KIUC is suggesting that they might want to do that,
right? And so it could be a very good thing because it would be competition to the otherwise monopoly of the cable companies, and where they've implemented that in other electric utilities, they provide like 1 gigabit services, including the full suite of cable with, you know, internet, voice over internet, et cetera, for less than spending $75 to $90 a month. So it could be a really great thing if they can get that done here.
So the question got asked, would that have phone in it also?
Voice over internet would be the way most people, like if you're getting your phone right now from now Charter Spectrum, that's voice over internet basically. So KIUC could do the same thing. Now, I don't know anything about the details of what KIUC is proposing to do. But in general, the technology can be a very good option for rural areas like ours that have electric utility co-ops.
Well, good. Thank you for that insight. And we were speaking, I don't know if you heard a little bit earlier, but we were speaking about what Mel Raposo included in his piece on behalf of the Kauai Community Coalition on housing, and you were part of that group. Do you have anything you would like to be sharing about what you felt that you heard at the general plan update meeting on housing?
I can give a little bit. I was driving, so I didn't hear everything you might have already discussed, so pardon me if I'm redundant here. But in essence, Mel's been very supportive of looking to find ways to forward on affordable housing, because it really is a critical need, as you and I know it says many times. That it, Mike DeHielik at one of the meetings had said that it was a disaster that snuck up on us.
Yeah, a disaster that has snuck up on us. We might be losing you.
Yeah, nonetheless, it's still a disaster. And so we actually, I submitted a proposal with Mel, and we decided to pull it, bring it back in January, because there were some details in it that we needed to discuss with the county attorney, et cetera, to make it more likely that somebody can support it and actually go into implementation. Hopefully make it.
Yes. Okay. Well, Greg, I think that we're starting to lose you.
Oh, sorry.
No problem.
I am on a cell phone.
Yes.
I pulled over, so I'm not
hands free. But I noticed that there are a number of places, like I try, and when I see that there are so many holes in the reception, go, okay, that means we're in a little bit of a healthier environment, because being in the microwave elements that come out for the phones isn't great, but the phones aren't working that well for about the past month. So I think that we have lost Greg.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, you're there? Okay.
I pulled over. I'm not driving and talking at the same time. I think it's a really wise idea.
Okay.
Follow that.
But you have bad reception right there, so I'm probably going to have to
let you go.
Okay.
Sorry about that, but hopefully a little more information about the broadband over the electric utilities. And from what I learned, if you can hear me at all, I'm talking to one of the KIUC guys. When they put in the smart meters, they actually ended up putting in their own fiber backbone. So they really have beginnings of a very robust internet service that you can find a way to offer here.
I see.
Be a very good thing.
Okay, well, that's great to know. And again, KIUC of Quiet Island Utility Cooperative is listening in, I would like to get the engineers in here. It would be nice to maybe talk to Jason and Brad, maybe Beth. So, okay, thank you so much, Greg, for calling in.
And thanks so much for everything you and every Tuesday. It helps us all inform. We appreciate it a lot.
Okay. You're so valued. Thank you for calling.
Mahalo, and mele kalikimaka to everybody.
Okay, mele kalikimaka to you, too.
Aloha.
And Jazz with John is in. He's coming up at the top of the hour. John, put your headphones on. We have to just say Merry Christmas to you a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah, we love our John Gordon. John, what do you have coming on for music today? Are you going to do a Christmas show?
Yeah, definitely. I've got not entirely, but mostly Christmas music. So,
right on. And John, how's your week been?
Rainy.
Rainy. It's definitely been rainy. Are you looking forward to the Christmas season?
Oh yeah, always do. Yeah.
Do you have grandkids?
Yes, we have two.
Two.
And they're grown.
They're grown. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot, you know, of love going around on the North Shore and across the islands here. So it's good to see.
I think so. And also want to mention the Lions Golf Tournament, which is coming up on the 13th of January. We'll be running some spots on that on KKCR. So all you golfers,
okay,
be sure to pay attention. So.
And I think that they're having at the Church of the Pacific maybe on Thursday night. Do you know that? I got to look this up here. I think that they're having a play, like a I'm just going to try and look in here. They have like a Christmas play. They do it every year. They do different.
They do it outside, I think, don't they?
Yeah, it was very good.
Kind of open theater thing they have. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about it. I haven't seen that yet.
I'm trying to think. I remember what the name of it is. I'm almost certain that's going to be Thursday night. And before I... trying to see if I've got it here. Because it's worth going to. It's really fun to see... you know, our local community doing a lot of elements and plays. There's been so many plays this month. It's been really great.
Yeah, we have a lot going on in our community. And what do you think of the new tax bill?
Well, we were just kind of talking about that. I think it's a disaster.
I think so, too.
You know, I'm hoping that they're going to be... updating it and making it a little bit better. I mean, what I can tell, it looks like it's very short-sighted. It's going to make a lot of mistakes.
And the revenue thing is projected, from what I've seen, you know, they think, well, they're going to cut the taxes for the businesses, and that's going to make everything boom. But the data I've seen is that that's not really for sure. And if it's not, then it's going to really increase our national debt. And then they'll have to cut other sustainables, you know, like Social Security and Medicare and all that stuff in order to balance the budget.
Well, some of the stuff I've seen on Medicare, I think it's still in the proposal phase, but like dropping cancer coverage, you know, I mean, it's beyond belief for me, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
A lot of it's beyond belief. I sit there, it's like watching a slow-moving train wreck.
Yep.
Or something like that. So I try and stay upbeat about it. It's hard to stay too upbeat about it.
It is, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. You've lived here for so long. Do you still have relatives or anything on the continental United States?
Yes. Yeah. My daughter and both grandkids live there. My brother-in-law lives there. So.
And is all this presidential stuff real to them? For me, it's almost surreal.
I don't know. I haven't asked him, but that's a good question. I'll do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
We've
well, you're going to be on at the top of the hour, and the county council report. I've got a kind
long.
Of a long county council report, so I'm going to take a very quick call here. Aloha, you're on the air.
Well, there is one bright thing to the debacle of this tax bill.
Okay.
You know, is that and this is what the pundits say, you know, at least Donald Trump gets his big victory before the end of the year, a legislative victory, so it's a feather in his cap. And they were joking because that's what it's all about. They rushed it through, you know. It's really not, you know, just because, you know, the commander-in-chief is going to get all this like, you know, kudos from his pals, you know, on Wall Street and in Congress and stuff. Because I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, in the way the pollings are is most Americans don't like the tax bill.
Yeah.
You're not alone, Felicia and John, you know, and me, you know, the most, you know, like over 60% of Americans can see that, wow, this isn't really going to help the,
right.
the working class.
It's tough. You know? Thank you so much.
Anyways,
thank you.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Okay, you too. All right, listeners, have a Merry Christmas. Here is the County Council Report, and at the top of the hour is Jazz with John.